Lorcabilla Dave is speaking to his mother in response to very important questions that she asked him. She began this chapter by expressing her dissatisfaction with the status quo. That feeling of dissatisfaction or lack of fulfillment with the material status quo is the beginning of the human form of life. Without that feeling that something's amiss, without that feeling that no matter what you do, you can't connect with what fulfills you, that feeling is crucial. And that's how Devahuti begins her inquiries to Kapila Dev. I can't handle the status quo. The way my mind is functioning, the way my body is functioning, the way I'm attached to sense objects through the body and mind. I've had enough. So she expresses her realizations. She wants to get to the bottom of her existential situation. Often today, people are not so worried about how they should live. They're trying to understand why they should live. There's a big difference. Perhaps the previous generations were very much concerned with being a bit moral when everyone's looking, and being nice and courteous, and being prim and proper. How to keep up an image that you're a good citizen, you're a nice person. You have your excesses, you have your weaknesses, but not too much. So previously, people were very much concerned with how they should live. How can I be known as a good person? How can my neighbors, my church mates, how can they think of me as a good person? But, as you know, all that has faded. And so now it's all about, what am I going to get for me? How am I going to enjoy it? And how are you going to justify your existence in my life by providing for enjoyment for me? Everybody now agrees that is the bottom line. What are you going to do for me? And here's what I might do for you. So, no longer is the issue how do you live life. Instead, the issue is why should you live at all? What difference does it really make whether you're living or dead? What's the point of your life anyway? Why are you breathing? This is why people become so nihilistic, so destructive in their behavior. Why shouldn't I get totally wasted? Why not? You know? What am I doing alive anyway? What's the point of my being alive? Might as well just obliterate myself, devastate myself. What's wrong with diving into just nonstop sensuality? What are you supposed to do with yourself anyway? You got this body. I didn't ask for this body, they think. I got this thing, this machine, this body, so bodies do body things. I don't know what else there is to life. Do you? So, as we said, the issue these days is not so much how should you live, but the question is why are you alive in the first place? What's the purpose? Does anyone know? There's just no standards at all. There's no guidelines. Anyone who attempts to present to you a standard or a guideline is just making it up, so why should you listen anyway? Basically, the world is meaningless. But you should find your own meaning, even though you're just going to die and that's it. Still, you can be a hero, you can be valiant by finding your own meaning in the temporary cosmos, in your temporary life. Otherwise, just be content to be a useless passion. So we all know there's lots of passion going on. But what people say, what's wrong with being a useless passion? I know it's all meaningless. I know it's all pointless. But what else are you supposed to do? So accept your fate in the universe. That your life is just a useless passion. For some reason, you're tortured by this desire to make meaning to have a meaningful life. For some reason, you're tortured by this desire to have meaningful fulfillment. But the courageous person, the true hero, faces the fact that there's no meaning. You're just living in chaos. Your life is just chaos, a random interaction of chemicals. That's all you are. So, just be a useless passion. You're condemned to do that. So you might as well have a good time at it, even though it's meaningless. See? This is the bottom line these days. I remember last time I was in Swansea. It might have been a Friday night or something. I was watching everyone scurrying to the center of the city here, you know, ready for a Friday night of meaningless enjoyment. And you could just see that people aren't thinking about what they're doing. It's just that what else are you supposed to do? You got a body. You got a mind. Didn't ask for it. Don't know how you got it. So you might as well just, you know, get into it. Mix it up a bit, you know. And don't expect it all to work out in your favor anyway. That's just the way it is. You know, life in the big city or small city. So, this is what's going on these days. This is why you see people destroying themselves with such enthusiasm. Why not? Why should I live? What's the point of my life? No one knows. So whether I act this way or act that way, who knows? Just do what's appealing to you at the moment. That's the deep philosophy now. So our devotees, they're scratching their heads wondering, why aren't people concerned with how they should live? They can't get that far. First of all, they're trying to deal with, why am I alive? Why should I be alive? Why should I live? You got to answer that for them. Then, after step one, you can go to step two. Step two is, how should you live? What's the best way to live? What constitutes the best life? But right now, you see, they can't figure out why they're alive. That's why you see them destroying themselves. And you wonder, well, how can you do that to yourself? You ask yourself the question in your pre-devotee days, how could I have done those things to myself? Man! It's because you didn't understand why you're alive. Therefore, you never concerned with yourself really with how should you live? What constitutes a good life or moral life? You didn't get that far. And this is what's going on these days. People can't get that far. They're bewildered by why they're alive. So you have to deal with that root bewilderment. Devahuti, in speaking to her son, Kapiladeva, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, she tells him, I'm just sick of the way my body and mind are carrying on in relation to material nature. In so many words, she said that. And you are my transcendental I achieved after countless lifetimes of conditioned life. You can bring me to the other side. So she requested transcendental knowledge from her son. And now Kapiladeva is speaking. This is a very important chapter, The Glories of Devotional Service. And Kapiladeva is explaining what goes on in terms of our so-called struggle for existence. It's not a so-called struggle. When I say so-called struggle, I mean, we think that we have justifiable goals, and therefore the struggle is worth it. But actually, based on what Lord Kapiladeva is going to explain to you, the struggle is not worth it. And in fact, you don't really need to struggle. But we put all that wisdom aside and assume, I've got to strive for physical and mental fulfillment in the material world. It's an unnecessary struggle. Therefore, we say it's a so-called struggle. But once you plunge into the pool of nature, of material nature, then you are struggling. You have voluntarily entered the nightmare. So what goes on in your so-called normal, everyday, material life? What goes on is that, Lorca Bilodeva explains, your consciousness is attracted by the three modes of material nature. We need to accept that consciousness must always be attracted to something. You cannot exist neutral of anything that attracts you. It's the nature of your makeup to be attracted. Not only attracted, but to be attached. But first, Lorca Bilodeva is dealing with attraction. Because if you can understand how you're being hypnotized and bewildered by material nature, you can save yourself so much trouble. And your progress to become attached to Krishna will be so much easier. What is it that's gotten to our head? You should ask yourself that question sometime. What got into my head that I'm so much implicated in material existence? What got into my consciousness? What's going on? What is this whole process of material fulfillment? What is it all about? Basically, you're hearing in this verse what it's all about. Your consciousness has been attracted by Trigunamayi. So you might say, well, so what? You know, everyone's, you know, that's what's happening. It's all around us, material nature, you know. Yeah, it attracts me. So what? But Lorca Bilodeva is pointing out this is a fatal mistake. Yes, you've got to be attracted to something. But you shouldn't just excuse yourself in that way. Like, what do you want out of me? I got to be attracted to something, you know. Things happen, you know. Life goes on. No, it's your responsibility as a human being to become attracted and attached to the right thing. And therefore, we have the process of bhakti. As Lorca Bilodeva says here, when that same consciousness is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in the consciousness of liberation. We need to see how our life is being progressive. Sometimes our devotees, they get a little disgruntled that, you know, I've been practicing bhakti for 2, 3, 4 years, maybe 10 years, and I don't really see how I'm going to attain the ultimate goal of life. It seems so far beyond me. But what you should look for is the symptoms that you are making progress. Those symptoms that you're making progress are very important because they're letting you know that the goal can be progressively achieved. It's just like when you're driving, let's say from London to Swansea, you see the signs on the road, you know, this many miles, these many miles to Cardiff, and these many miles to Swansea. So you feel that, well, I haven't gotten there yet. Mm-hmm. Like when we were stuck in traffic trying to get out of London yesterday. Gorkha Shore Prabhu had it all figured out. We leave at 10 o'clock, no traffic. Within 5 minutes after we left his house, we were stuck in traffic for the next hour. So, how does one feel in that situation? When you're in a traffic jam that lasts like an hour and a half, you feel like, I'm just going nowhere. I can't stand this. You know, I just flown in from Australia the morning before. It's like 32, 33 hours of air travel, including in between flights. Locked up in a, you know, metal tube for all those hours, breathing bad air, and your body just wedge tight. Okay. So then the next day you're off to Wales and you think, oh, we leave at 10 o'clock, there'll be smooth sailing, no cars. Gorgi Shore promised, yeah. And then for an hour and a half, 2 hours, you're just, you know, bumper to bumper. So you just feel like, wow, I'm going nowhere. And sometimes our devotees start to feel like that. I'm in a heavy traffic jam in terms of my bhakti. I'm going nowhere. My senses have jumped me. My mind is tearing me to pieces. I'm going nowhere. And then you hear the devotees in class and amongst themselves talk about, you know, the glories of devotional service, the glories of reviving our relationship with Krishna. And you just want to, hey, let's get real. I'm in a traffic jam. I'm going nowhere. Like, what am I doing here? And then you try to rationalize. And, of course, the illusory energy starts to talk to you. Illusory energy is always talking, but you start to listen. What's that you say? Oh, really? That's what's going on. Oh, thank you, thank you. Sounds more realistic to me. It sounds more practical than what these devotees are saying. And of course, they mean well. Devotees do mean well. But sometimes, you know, they're a bit disconnected from reality. But now that I'm listening to Maya again, I kind of feel more wholesome, you know? I feel like I feel like my life can have some meaning. So what does Maya tell you in those moments when you're just caught in gridlock in a traffic jam and you feel like, I'm going nowhere. I'm just stuck. Maya tells you that bhakti is wonderful, but it's not for you. Because the illusory energy knows that you want to be a theist. You want to be you want to be God conscious. You want to believe in the soul. And you don't want to deny all that. At the same time, why is it that you can't live a bhakti lifestyle? So Maya gives you adequate rationalization, justification. Yes, bhakti is for real. It's true. What Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita is true. But very few persons can actually live like that. You know that. All right, you may be around in bhakti for a few years, but you know what's going to happen after a while. Come on, let's be honest. Do you really think that you are going to be a sadhu? You know you. I know you. We all know your background. How long do you think it's going to take before the chickens come home to roost? Before you go back to your normal self? So, Maya assures you, it's not that I'm saying that bhakti is imaginary. No, bhakti is for real. It's the sweetest thing. We all agree to that. But whether you can attain it, that is the question. So that's how you start thinking when you're stuck in the traffic jam of your bhakti. You feel like, I'm going nowhere. I'm not making any progress. What's wrong? So let's analyze what actually is going on when we get caught up with material nature. Our consciousness is attracted by Trigunamayi. So then you have to know what is the nature of Trigunamayi, and therefore you won't find that to be such a desirable situation. When people say, hey, that's life, go with the flow, they're basically saying, just go with Trigunamayi, let the three modes of nature act on you, it's all right. But that, we say, is not human life. That is animal life. To say, let the modes act on me, whatever, that is not real human life. Real human life begins with the fight against material nature. And sometimes our devotees, you know, they get tired of that. Why does fight all the time? Why does battle? If Krishna is so great, why doesn't he just let me be Krishna conscious? I want that. But why the struggle? Why the effort? Of course, those same persons, once chewed up by the illusory energy, don't see any problem with struggling with the material energy at work, at home. But when it comes to bhakti, you shouldn't struggle. It should just be presented to you on a silver plate. A real understanding of bhakti informs you that the struggle to regain your Krishna consciousness is a divine struggle. It's the preliminary to love. You're trying to get yourself together for the sake of entering into relationship with Krishna. So what's wrong with that kind of struggle? You have to struggle one way or another. Either you'll struggle with material nature, or you'll struggle to revive your Krishna consciousness. So you have to convince yourself that struggling to revive your Krishna consciousness is the only purpose in life. You may get caught in traffic jams and you don't feel like you're making any spiritual advancement. You may have smooth driving on an empty road for a while. Doesn't matter. You have to be committed to your mission. Your mission is to revive your love for Krishna. And therefore you're willing to tolerate the pushings of your mind and senses. That's why Rupa Goswami, in the first verse of Upadeshamrita, says, Vacho Vegam Manasa Krota Vegam Jiva Vegam Udarapasta Vegam Echan Veganyo Vishahita Dira. If you can tolerate the pushings of the mind, the senses, you're actually able to spread bhakti all over the world. The pushings may be there, but if you can not act on them, then Rupa Goswami says you're certified. You can make disciples all over the world. That's how great an understanding it is of material nature and how to conduct yourself in material nature. So once we accept that, come what may, we're going to go on trying to become qualified to love Krishna, then we become a bit peaceful. The storms of material nature may blow, and they will blow. Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukada. Krishna himself explains. The winter and summer seasons come and go. Similarly, material happiness and distress come and go. Yeah, not caught up with all that. You're focused on what is your goal in life. So this is the nature of bhakti, to have a focus. You know what your occupation is. Just like people who have a job, you see them. They just go to work, they come home, they go to work, they come home. They have their occupation. Of course, a devotee doesn't want to do devotional service in such a mindless way. As Krishna says in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in all activities, be fully conscious of him. That means thinking, I'm doing this for Krishna's pleasure. Let me do it the best I can. Whether you're sweeping a floor or doing complex financial management, you're doing it for Krishna and you're thinking, I want to give my best. So my point is, let us not be afraid of a struggle. I often point out, suppose someone came up to you and said, you know, I've really been trying to please you. I've been going through so much just to try and please you. How would you feel? Oh, yeah, this is what life is about. Especially, you know, in family arrangements, you know, a husband or wife said that to a teacher, you know, I'm willing to struggle just to try to make you happy. How would you feel? Yeah, it sounds more like the way life should be. We want that for ourselves. Why can't we give that to Krishna? We're so lazy in the age of Kali. Manda sumanda matteo, manda bhagya. Where is our stamina? Where is our drive? What we want for ourselves, why can't we give that to Krishna? So what's wrong with the struggle to please Krishna's senses? Just like when we were stuck in the traffic jam on the way here yesterday. You still kept the goal in mind. Oh, we're going to get through this traffic jam somehow or other. Not going to give up. And gradually, the traffic thinned out. are able to make some progress. So when you have your goal always in mind, you tolerate the temporary struggles. And so what if it's a struggle? Why do we have against a struggle? Why are we so predisposed against that? When basically you have a choice. Do you struggle to please Krishna or do you struggle with material nature? So Lord Kapildev is explaining that material life means you are attracted by the three modes of material nature. So you might say, well, yeah, that's part of life, so what? But attracted by the three modes of material nature means you're going to struggle. Unknowingly, you're attracted by struggle for material existence. And therefore, your life will be wasted. Whether you're attracted by goodness, passion, or ignorance, Prabhupada explains in the purport that the central attachment, regardless of these different qualitative activities in the three modes of material nature, the central attachment is for material enjoyment. That's all that's going on in material nature, the struggle for material enjoyment. So you have to deprogram yourself. What's gotten inside my head? Why am I so prone to be attracted to the three modes of material nature? Be educated. Be knowledgeable. Don't just tell yourself, well, I'm just attracted to just kind of living my own life and no one telling me what to do and, you know, being able to go to the movies, go to watch TV when I want to, you know, hang out with who I want to for however long I want to hang out with the person. You know, I'm just attracted to that. No, you are attracted to the three modes of material nature. And what does that mean? This is the important point. Once you understand what's captivated you, what's gotten into your head, then you won't find it to be such an innocent thing to be attracted to material nature. You have to know what material nature is. And that is what Kapildev is explaining to his mother. There'll be a few chapters after this, understanding material nature, fundamental principles of material nature. And Lord Kapildev is going to expose how the magic show works. As a human being, you're duty bound to understand these things. It's not that this is some kind of esoteric knowledge only meant for a few. No, Lord Kapildev is giving you the basic knowledge necessary for living a sane life. A sane life makes progress toward reconnecting with Krishna. As the verse says, but when that same consciousness is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in the consciousness of liberation. Many persons are attracted to the bhakti process and the association of devotees because they see you're making progress. They may know it, they may not know it, but you're making progress to liberation. They can see you all are becoming free. Mm-hmm. You're not attracted by this magic show that I got so caught up in. And that lack of attraction for the magic show of material existence, I see, has produced such beneficial effects in you. So this is what people are watching for. They, if they're halfway intelligent, know they're entombed. They know that they're imprisoned. But they can't understand what is freedom until they see you. And they start checking you out. Like George Harrison describes in one interview, his first reactions upon meeting devotees. He was checking them out. Well, yeah, this one looks kind of liberated. That one, you over here look a bit spaced out. That's natural. You start sizing everyone up, right? Didn't you all do that? Yeah, this one's got a bit of a glow. Well, that one looks kind of down and out. Right? Didn't you all do that? So based on what you saw in terms of devotee behavior, you started to think, maybe it's possible to become free of material nature. That thought doesn't dawn upon you unless you meet devotees and you start to realize freedom is possible. And then you start to calculate, what's the price of freedom? And so many of you, for the first few years in your bhakti development, every morning are making that calculation. Right? Is this really worth it? What's the price of freedom? Now you look at what so-called heroes of material nature have done. How they've gone through so much just for some goal composed of Trigunamayi, the three modes of material nature. It's like this personality in South Africa. He wrote his autobiography, Long Walk to Freedom, 27 years in prison, just for a political goal. And we think, 5 years of trying to hear the Hare Krishna mantra. It's so hard for Boost. 27 years in prison, all for the goal of political liberation. To relieve their boredom while they were in prison, this person and his other associates, they would teach each other ballroom dancing just to make sure they didn't lose their mind out of, you know, boredom. So you can admire their will to survive at all costs, their will to achieve their goal. 27 years just for some nebulous flickering thing like political emancipation. And we whinge so easily. Get caught in a traffic jam of bhakti in terms of our spiritual development. We moan and groan. It's not worth it, Prabhus. I tried. I know what Krishna says is true, but, you know, it's just unattainable. Why does Krishna torture us in this way? He's made bhakti so sweet, but at the same time, it's impossible. We all know that. So for some of you, your first few years are going to be a daily calculation every morning. Is the struggle worth it? Have I handed over my so-called freedom of enjoying material life? Have I handed that over for nothing? Or what am I going to get in return? But your real progress begins when you decide, I am Krishna's servant. And no matter what, I'm going to go on serving Krishna. Actually, the real freedom begins when you drop the calculations. But you're afraid to do that. Oh, no, if I drop the calculations, what might happen to me, you know? We're not dropping the calculations based on sentiment. We're dropping it based on knowledge. And Lord Kapil Dev is giving that kind of knowledge. Drop your calculations about whether the struggle to please Krishna is worth it, and just try to please Krishna. In other words, make proper use of that energy that you're investing in calculation. Is this worth it? Another day of not doing what I want to do. That's basically the bottom line. Another day of not having uncontrolled senses. That's basically what you want to do. Another day of that. Is it worth it? But if you get the opportunity to become so absorbed in devotional service, you will taste real freedom. So if you have that chance to be so absorbed in devotional service, thank Krishna. Let Krishna know this is the rarest opportunity to become free from my calculations and just plunge into service to you. And think that your pleasure is my goal and work for that goal. If you get that kind of chance, so to speak, never let Krishna forget it. Always let Krishna know, I appreciate this so much. This is my life. And sometimes Krishna will test you. You won't have a service situation that suits your appetite in terms of you want to do more service, but circumstances temporarily seem to be holding you back. Health reasons, family reasons. There can be so many complications in this world of complications. So at those times, you really appreciate, oh, the next time I get a clear shot at service, I am really going to take advantage. So Krishna knows what he's doing. Sometimes Even though you have a deep desire to serve, you, due to circumstances, material circumstances, you can't engage in service to your full desires. Therefore, when you do get that chance to plunge deep into Krishna's service, you always thank Krishna. I thank you so much. Without this, what is the meaning to life? What is the purpose of my life? Even when that devotional service seems like a struggle, you thank Krishna that you have such a mission. And obviously, if you do that, Krishna will take you more seriously. Krishna will consider that you are a dedicated practitioner, a dedicated servant. Basically, we want to win Krishna's confidence that we are a suitable servitor. Then, once you can gain Krishna's confidence, at least partially in you, then your service opportunities become more productive. Just like in any relationship, if you can win the other person's confidence, the relationship then can show progressive dynamics. So we're trying to show Krishna that we can sort of be trusted, you know? Sort of. We're trying to win Krishna's confidence in us. And you do that by stick-to-itness in bhakti. We shouldn't minimize stick-to-itness. It is very essential for progressing in a relationship. Commitment, stick-to-itness. When others see that in you, they also become inspired to be like that. They see that devotees who have this stick-to-itness, this dedication, others can see. Regardless of how what you're doing looks to my material senses, it looks like, you know, you're just doing the same thing every day. It looks like you're not thinking of yourself enough. Regardless of what my senses tell me, there's something else going on that I detect. You actually seem to be free. You seem to be out of jail. And that's what attracts people to want to associate with devotees. They see, here's what they see. They see free spirits eating good prasad. I hope that has to be there, you know. Free spirits eating so nicely. I want to be like that too. I want to feel free from material nature like they are experiencing. And I want to eat nicely, like they're eating nicely. As simple as that. So what makes for the imprisonment? The imprisonment comes from being attracted with your consciousness to material nature. It's not an innocent thing. And we really got to straighten ourselves out. And so what if it takes a while? So what if sometimes you feel like you're caught in a traffic jam of bhakti? You're not making any progress. So what? The goal is so worth it. So in other words, the life of a devotee is one of you're overwhelmed by the goal. It's going to happen. And you see signposts along the way. Some or other, we've got to disconnect our consciousness from Trigunamayi, from the three modes of material nature, and attach our consciousness to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is our program. This is progress. If someone can spend 27 years in their quest for political emancipation, why can't we spend 27 years in our quest to become free from material nature? Why not 40 years? Why not 50 years? The struggle must be there. But the bhakti life is a struggle of love. That's the difference. And as we already said, if someone said to you that they're struggling to please you, you would say, oh, that's very nice, very nice. Let it continue, let it continue. I'm glad someone understands what the purpose of life is, to please me. Again, what we want for ourselves, why can't we give it to Krishna? finally then, is the struggle to disconnect your consciousness from material nature, is it a very bleak struggle? Is it a very barren struggle? No. That's why you have the association of devotees. Srila Prabhupada once commented that anything can be tolerated in good association. So if you're feeling like you're starting to become weak, if you're feeling like you're starting to become intolerant and snappy and just starting to lose sight of the goal, you're stuck in the traffic jam like we were yesterday and just seemed like it was going to go on and on and on, you need good association. In that good association, anything can be tolerated. Just like these political liberationists were in prison for 27 years, but they just felt, you know, we have each other's association. They're even doing things like teaching each other ballroom dancing. You know, they're all men. Just, you know, anything, just to somehow to pass the time, keep from going nuts. That's materialite. What about devotees? We're on a different platform. Why can't we take advantage of each other so that anything can be tolerated because we have the association of one another? That is the Bhakti Sangha. And then in that kind of Sangha, in that kind of association, you're ready to sacrifice for making progress, to disconnect your consciousness from the three modes of material nature. This is serious business, because as long as your consciousness is connected to material nature, you're going to suffer. That you have to convince yourself of. I've got to get out of the whole system of material nature. I've got, in terms of disconnecting my consciousness. Then, because I'm doing the bhakti practice, I'm not simply dealing with negative, disconnecting myself, I'm also dealing with the positive, attaching my consciousness to Krishna. So that's basically what goes on in a devotee's life. And in good association, we tolerate the traffic jams, we tolerate the ups and downs that seem to be there in bhakti because of our impure consciousness. Yes, we have to learn within reason, within reasonable bounds, we have to learn to tolerate ourselves. Put up with ourselves. Okay, this is the way I am. I shouldn't be like this, but I'm going to work on it. And don't jump overboard just because you have some bad tendencies that you're carrying for many lifetimes. Tolerating yourself, of course, doesn't mean tolerating illicit activity, but tolerate the tendencies, the bad tendencies that you've picked up over countless lifetimes of material existence. And it's just like when you're stuck in a traffic jam, you got to tolerate the fumes around you and so many things, but you keep your goal in mind. You'll see that the goal is progressively achieved, and you'll become inspired to attach your consciousness to Krishna, especially if you have service that you can take as your life and soul, no matter what. Then you start to attract Krishna's confidence in you. This is a serious servitor. Then things start to happen in bhakti. So the sooner we leave the stage of calculation, the better. And I know that stage of calculation is natural in the beginning. You wake up in the morning, you ask yourself, should I really be here? Is it like all the Prabhus really say? Is it really like that? You look around. Is everyone else blissful today? Or are they having problems? There's an older devotee. And check him out. I mean, is he really all that they say he is? Does he look blissful? Right? Isn't that what, that's what you guys ask yourselves, right? Then out of the corner of your eye on a Friday night, you see everyone in the streets going to their party places, and you say, well, Nah, they're all miserable. I know. Krishna says they're all miserable. Yeah. You'll get over that if you plunge into the next stage, which is beyond calculation. The next stage is becoming dedicated to devotional service. Then Krishna starts to take you seriously. And you start to just a little bit gain Krishna's confidence. And Krishna knows you've got these tendencies accumulated for lifetimes. He's the super soul in your heart. He knows better than you what you've been through. What your tendency to be attached to material nature. Krishna knows all that. But the system of devotional service gives you a chance to gain Krishna's confidence in spite of all your past tendencies. So in this way, if we keep good association and have a chance to sacrifice for Krishna, you'll definitely make spiritual progress. And be prepared for a lifetime of making progress. Just like some mundane persons are ready to dedicate a lifetime for a mundane goal. Hare, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.